Here's one more factor that makes it hard to understand China. As rapidly as we try to learn about the world's rising power, China evolves once again. This week, we've heard how the country's economy altered the lives of three Chinese brothers. This morning, we'll learn some of the ways that Chinese workers are changing the country's economy. What they do affects our own country's businesses, which is why we've brought in two correspondents to talk about it. First is NPR's Frank Langfitt, who brought us a little bit of sound here, which is creeping in. And Frank, what are we beginning to hear?
We're hearing a furniture factory down in South China. And I was back there in January visiting a number of factories and kind of getting a feel for what had changed in workers' lives.
Now, when you say a furniture factory in South China, what I imagine is hundreds, if not thousands, of people fresh off farms working under virtual slave labor conditions. Is that what happens today?
Well, you're definitely right on the thousands of people, but I noticed a really big difference. I'd worked in China in the late 90s, and what was really striking now was that workers had a lot more power. You know, there was a labor shortage that emerged around 2003, 2004 that a lot of people didn't anticipate. But when I was there, people were, you know, would walk out of the factories. If they didn't like what they were doing, they didn't like the conditions, they would just leave. And I remember talking to one guy who was saying he was going to go back home for Chinese New Year's, back to the farm. And he said, I'll just find a work back home. I'm not going to come back here.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about what this means by going to Hong Kong. Another person is going to join our conversation, Alexandra Harney. She's a former reporter for the Financial Times, and she has a new book about manufacturing in southern China called The China Price. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
So when Frank Langfitt says that workers seem to have more power, is this getting more like the United States where people can demand a raise or walk?
Absolutely. I think what's happening in China today is that Chinese workers have a wider choice of places to work, and they are definitely more aware of their rights. For the last two decades, most of the factories, the export factories, have been located on the coasts. But now what's changing is that there are more factories inland. So friends of mine who are migrant workers, workers who come from the countryside into the cities, are finding work in real estate, in hair salons, in other places that you wouldn't have expected them to do, say, 10 years ago.
Okay, so what does that mean for U.S. companies who had been going to China for cheap products?
Well, it means, first of all, that American companies are going to have to pay more for the goods they buy from China. One of the factors behind this is the workers and their greater awareness of their rights, but another factor is, of course, that the renminbi, China's currency, has appreciated more than 15% since 2005. So the problem with that for American companies is that there is no other China. American companies are trying to source more in Vietnam and looking to India. But China has been unique in that it's had these supply chain clusters. So everything you need to make a computer is within, say, 100 miles of the city of Dongguan in southern China. Now that China is becoming more expensive, American companies are going to have to start thinking about whether they're willing to pay more, whether they can shave more costs off by having more efficient logistics and supply chains, or whether they need to start looking at sourcing more from countries like India and eventually perhaps countries like Brazil or Kenya or Madagascar.
Well, now, if part of the reason that we have hardly had any inflation in the United States in recent years is because of incredibly cheap stuff from China, does that mean that China's labor issues are part of the reason that we're worried about inflation now in the United States?
I think so. I think that we're going to start seeing more and more of this show up on American price tags this year and next year. I talked to people out here in China who are negotiating over, say, the shoe prices for next year right now. So we won't see the impact of Chinese inflation on American running shoe price tags perhaps until spring 2009. But some retailers and importers I talk to are telling me that they are already starting to have to raise the prices in the U.S.
We're talking about China's changing economy with Alexandra Harney and with NPR's Frank Langfitt. And Frank, what do Chinese officials do when they see business fleeing to Vietnam, India, or elsewhere?
Well, what they want to do is climb the value chain. They want to produce high tech. They want to be much more innovative. And in many ways, this is good. I mean, the time has kind of passed for China to be this low-wage manufacturing area. The real challenge, though, I think, and I'd be interested to hear what Alexandra has to say about this, is can they really innovate? I mean, this is a culture that hasn't really stressed innovation. There's more of an emphasis on conformity and rote learning. And it's a lot easier to take a farmer out of Sichuan province and teach him how to make a shoe. But are you going to be able to really kind of change the way people think so that they can be a lot more innovative, not always knock off all these Western products? And I think that's where the money is, and that's probably, at least from the perspective of the officials, where they hope the future of the economy is.
I think that's right. I think the issue is not whether China can move up the value chain, but how successful it can be. Many of the advantages that China relied on in the first phase of its export boom, a huge pool of cheap, unskilled labor, poor law enforcement, loose management, won't be very helpful in the next phase of their export boom. And I think the next phase will be more about brain power than about manpower.
But wait a minute, because you do have American executives right now saying we're very worried about India and China because they've got so many thousands and thousands of engineering graduates coming out. Are they not really that far advanced?
They do have a lot of engineers, but some of the studies that I've seen show that part of the problem, it lies within China's education system. And I'm not in any way trying to say that Chinese engineers aren't good. They're great. But the education system tends to focus more on theory over practice. And what China needs is more experienced engineers who are able to work in a multinational environment, who are able to bring more to the table.
I think one of the big challenges, too, is, you know, can they develop a really great global brand that's at the high end? And so far, we don't really have that. I mean, they bought Lenovo bought IBM, but we haven't seen, you know, a Boeing or an Airbus from China.
Japan did it.
Japan did do it. I think one of the interesting things about this is that in the supply chain, people often say that out of, say, if a product retails for $4, $3 of that is made by the company that is earned by the company that actually owns the brand or other people. Only a dollar of that goes to the manufacturer. So China is very aware of that $3 and would like to move into that $3 zone. The question is, developing a brand requires a whole different set of skills. It's a softer skill. It's a management skill. It's marketing. And Chinese companies are working very hard to develop these skills, but it takes time. It's not something you can just import or sort of cook up overnight.
Alexandra Harney is author of The China Price. She's in Hong Kong. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
NPR's Frank Langfitt is back from his latest reporting trip to China. Frank, thanks for your reports this week.
Happy to do it.
And you can find an exploration of China's growing influence in the world by going to our website, npr.org. Thank you.